Good evening, a travel advisory for New York, a fight over police reform in Congress, and preliminary primary results in New York City and New York State. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut issued a travel advisory Wednesday that requires people arriving from states with high coronavirus rates to quarantine for 14 days. Governor Andrew Cuomo made the announcement today.
We're announcing today a joint travel advisory. People coming in from states that have a high infection rate must quarantine for 14 days. And we have a calibration for the infection rate, and any state that goes over that infection rate, that state will be subject to the quarantine.
Governor Cuomo, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, and Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont said the travel advisory applies to anyone coming from a state with a positive test rate higher than 10 per 100,000 residents over a seven-day rolling average, or a state with 10% or higher positivity rate over a seven-day rolling average. The governor explained that travel hasn't been banned, just controlled.
In New York, it's a travel advisory. You are informed that you should quarantine for 14 days. If you go to a hotel and a hotel clerk asks, how come you're not on quarantine? You go to a business meeting and somebody says, aren't you supposed to be in quarantine? You're stopped by a police officer who says, you're driving a car from Florida, license, weren't you supposed to be on quarantine 14 days? Any of those mechanisms, you can be detected as violating your quarantine. If you are violating the quarantine, you can be subject to a judicial order and mandatory quarantine. You could have to pay the costs of quarantine. There are also fines that can go along with violating the quarantine. $2,000 for the first violation, $5,000 for the second, up to $10,000 if you cause harm.
You're not stopping people anywhere. You're not helping.
No, quarantine doesn't stop people. None of the quarantines have stopped people. It's not that you have ever prohibited someone from entering a state. That is not a quarantine. That is a blockade. That's what the federal government threatened to do to us at one point. And I said that would start a civil war. That is, you cannot leave the state of New York. That's what the federal government was talking about. That is a blockade. It's not been done since the Civil War. There has been no state that has said you cannot enter our state. I don't believe that would be constitutional.
And that's Governor Cuomo. As of Wednesday, the advisory applies to Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Washington, Utah, and Texas. It begins tonight at midnight. In late March, President Trump considered placing the tri-state region under a quarantine. Rhode Island police stopped vehicles with New York license plates, and Florida directed all travelers from the area to isolate or quarantine for 2 weeks. As of Wednesday, 26 states reported an increase in states in cases in the past week, particularly in heavily populated states like California, Texas, Florida, and Arizona. A controversial Republican bill intended to reform police. Meanwhile, please pardon, we have some technical problems here, and we'll try and get over them as best we can. Could you wait 1 second? I have to do something quickly. And back to the news. A controversial Republican bill intended to reform police in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis failed on Wednesday to garner enough support to move forward in the United States Senate. Democrats opposed the bill as too little and too late. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer had this to say.
This bill lost because it was woefully inadequate. It never would have passed. And McConnell provided no path to improve it. So it was going to lose the minute he put it together, and the more cynical among us would say that's why he did it. And we were overwhelmingly supported by the entire civil rights community. I have a letter here signed by 136 civil rights organizations. And I want to read you what they how they characterize the bill that Leader McConnell put on the floor. This bill woefully falls short of the comprehensive reform needed to address the current policing crisis and achieve meaningful law enforcement accountability. It is a deeply problem. It is deeply problematic to meet this moment with a menial incremental approach that offers more funding to police and few policies to effectively address the constant loss of black lives at the hands of police. We therefore urge you to oppose the Justice Act and vote no on the motion to proceed. So Leader McConnell would like you to think, oh, these are Democrats playing games? No. These are civil rights groups who have been fighting for these things for decades, saying do the right thing, which clearly Leader McConnell didn't.
And that was Senator Schumer. President Trump, at a news conference with the leader of Poland today, responded that Democrats were trying to weaken the police.
Republicans want very much to pass a bill on police reform. We have total cooperation with many different communities, including the police community. They want it very much to happen themselves because there are things that they agree to that they would like to agree to, and they would love to have it agreed to formally. The Democrats don't want to do it because they want to weaken our police. They want to take away immunity. They want to do other things that you know about as well as anybody in this beautiful field that we sit. They want to take away a lot of the strength from our police and from law enforcement generally, and we can't live with that. Mitch wants it to happen. I would like to see it happen, but we won't sacrifice. We won't do that. We won't do anything that's going to hurt our police.
And that's President Trump. Meanwhile, the House Judiciary Committee met in contentious session to hear testimony about Attorney General William Barr, who Democrats say has been acting more as an agent for Trump's reelection than as an impartial arbiter of justice. Examples include pressure to reduce charges against a Trump aide, Roger Stone, and to drop charges against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The hearing started off on a nasty footing as the representatives fought over the rules of the hearing that allowed witnesses to testify remotely and required representatives to wear face masks.
Donald Eyre served as Deputy Attorney General.
Here we go again. I appealed the ruling of the chair on a point of order. You cannot overlook that.
And Mr. Collins, you can't interrupt these proceedings, and the American people deserve to know the truth.
There was no
ruling. This has nothing to do with the truth. This has to do with the ruling of the committee.
There was no ruling of the chair.
I made a point of order. You ruled. That's a ruling.
The point of order was not cognizable.
Then I appeal the ruling of the chair on not recognizing the point of order.
There was no ruling of the chair to appeal. Donald Eyre served as Deputy
Attorney
General.
Nothing changes around here.
This is too ironic.
Donald Eyre.
A witness, Donald Ayers, a federal prosecutor who was part of Robert Mueller's Russia investigation, told Congress on Wednesday how he believes Barr is a threat to democracy.
William Barr poses the greatest threat in my lifetime to our rule of law and to public trust in it. That is because he does not believe in its core principle that no person is above the law. Instead, since taking office, he has worked to advance his lifelong conviction that the president should hold virtually autocratic powers. That includes immunity from nearly all checks and balances and being able to accord special treatment to himself and his friends. The system that Barr is working to tear down was put in place in the aftermath of the Watergate scandals, which involved extensive government corruption and caused a widespread loss of trust. After Nixon resigned, President Ford's Attorney General Edward Leavy acted swiftly to restore trust by supporting reforms to prevent such abuses. These included statutes like FISA, the First Inspector General Act, expansion of FOIA, and the Whistleblower Protection Act. He has worked to defeat any meaningful oversight, either by Congress or by review in the courts, through litigation, legal opinions, and his own speeches. He has worked to undermine Congress's appropriation power by litigating the president's right to divert funds to pay for his border wall, which Congress refused repeatedly to fund. He has regularly undermined the authority of independent decision-making processes and career professionals. He has also done it by enlisting various political cronies to review and reverse decisions of experienced career attorneys, or by simply replacing them in handling matters of personal interest to the president. This is how he accomplished the reversals of long-held department positions in the cases of Trump associates Roger Stone and Michael Flynn, urging a much lighter sentence in one case and outright dismissal in the other.
Federal prosecutor Donald Ayers. Meanwhile, a divided federal appeals court on Wednesday ordered the dismissal of the case against former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Flynn twice pleaded guilty for lying to the FBI about his conversations with then-Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during the transition. D.C. Appeals Court Judge Naomi Rao, a Trump appointee, wrote the majority opinion. A former judge, Bill Blum, has written extensively for the Progressive magazine and other publications on justice under Trump. He says America is at a dangerous tipping point.
Donald Trump thinks that the federal government is an extension of one of his privately held corporations. And now he has his personal minister of the interior, otherwise known as Attorney General William Barr, at his side running interference for him. So we are in grave danger. This guy is different. He's not just another member of the business elite. He's an American proto-fascist, and we're at a dangerous crossroads.
We've talked in the past about the unitary presidency, the idea of the president's having power. Is this the ultimate outcome of that kind of legal theory?
One of the things I've been trying to figure out is why Bill Barr has sacrificed his career and his reputation in the service of Donald Trump. And some people have suggested that it's because Barr is a proponent of what's called the unitary executive theory, which says that all executive power in the United States is vested in a single person, namely the president, and that constitutional law has veered too far in favor of separation of powers and checks and balances, and that the president's power can't really be checked by Congress in the way that people assumed it could be in the past. And some of Trump's judicial appointments, like this Naomi Rao, who wrote the decision on the Michael Flynn case, believe that Congress has really no oversight power over the president other than via impeachment. And impeachment is a very difficult remedy. This is William Barr's idea of the presidency. Other explanations may be that Bill Barr really is a right-wing religious fanatic underneath it all, and now's the time to come forward. And as he said in one of his recent interviews, history is written by the winners. So he and Trump win, they'll get to write the epitaph to the American Constitution.
And that's Bill Blum, a former judge who writes on justice issues for The Progressive. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In New York yesterday, it was primary day, and despite problems at the polls and 700,000 absentee ballots yet to be counted, it looked like a blowout for progressives. In the Bronx, Jamal Bowman apparently bested longtime Representative Elliot Engel for the Democratic nomination.
Let me tell you something right now. Elliot Engel, and I'll say his name once, used to say that he was a thorn in the side of Donald Trump. But you know what Donald Trump is more afraid of than anything else? A black man with power. That is what Donald Trump is afraid of. So if the results continue to bear out, as they are bearing out this evening, and we get to Congress, it will be our job to hold Donald Trump accountable and to hold every elected official accountable that continues to be beholden to corporate interests, that continues to be beholden to the wealthy, and is not fighting for the poor and is not fighting for the working class in our country.
The first openly gay official in the Bronx is leading a pack of contenders that included anti-gay Ruben Diaz Jr.
So I'm not prepared to declare victory until every vote is counted, but even if I win the election, it's governing that matters. It's delivering results for the everyday people of the South Bronx. It would be the honor of my life to represent this borough. It's my home. And I would not be here today were it not for my mother. And the South Bronx is full of mothers like mine who have suffered and struggled and sacrificed so that her baby boy can have a better life than she did. And the opportunity to represent the essential workers of this borough, to represent the powerful mothers of this borough, it's the culmination of a dream. But we have to count every ballot.
And as Councilmember Richie Torres, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won a smashing victory against a well-funded conservative opponent to face probable re-election to Congress.
Some of the early results that we've seen have us at about 70 to 72%. To win with that kind of mandate is transformative. This challenge was not a small challenge. Millions of dollars were put in to unseat me in this primary election. Millions of dollars. That money came from Goldman Sachs. That money came from the CEO of Goldman Sachs. That money came from many Wall Street CEOs. And the reason they're bringing that money here is because we have exposed their for-profit private prison schemes. We have exposed their price gouging on life-saving medication. We have exposed the enormous price gouging from military contractors, and they don't want any of those things exposed. And so they decided to dump in millions of dollars to try to insert a corporate candidate that is accountable to them instead of being accountable to everyday people.
Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. All three candidates will face Republican challengers in November, but will probably skate to victory in heavily Democratic New York City. In the presidential primary, expected nominee Joe Biden won easily with two-thirds of the vote. His closest challenger, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, got about 20%. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 24, 2020. The news is produced Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul D'Arienzo.